SWR 2 Feature.
Okay.
Who am I talking to?
Maria Ressa. I am the CEO and one of the founders of Rappler in the Philippines.
Maria, what's your definition of truth?
So it really depends on if you're looking at it from power. Truth is anything power doesn't want. But in the end, the world remains complex. One man's terrorist is another man's freedom fighter. The key thing is to make sure we all have the facts. So truth stems from facts. Facts then lead to truth. Truth leads to trust. All of these three are necessary to have democracy. And the biggest problem that we're facing right now is that the social media platforms, the technology that allegedly that connects the world, right? So you have Facebook and WhatsApp alone combined, put together 2.7 billion people all around the world. For the first time in human history, the vertical silos of media in each country have been pushed together, right? Except that this platform technology actually spreads lies laced with anger and hate far faster than facts. Because let's face it, facts are boring. Journalists go through their whole lives to learn to tell stories that aren't boring, right? So when lies laced with anger and hate spread faster than facts, you have alternative realities. Without facts, you can't have truth. Without truth, you cannot have trust. Without all these three, you can't have democracy.
You're living in one of those countries which is run now by one of those guys who don't give a damn about facts.
I would say that the Philippines is the social media capital of the world, right? In 4 years running, Filipinos spend the most time on social media. And Facebook has become our internet because of zero rating, free basics. Essentially, Facebook is our internet. That's where people get their news. Our democratically elected leader is Rodrigo Duterte. He was elected in May 2016. A month later, Brexit happened. After that, you had Trump, then the Catalonia elections, and so on and so forth, leading to most recently the election of Jair Bolsonaro in Brazil. This election of strongman-type leaders have been aided by an information ecosystem where the world's largest distributor of news has refused to be the gatekeeper. In the past, journalists, organizations, news groups were both the distributor of news and the gatekeeper of facts. That's how we protected the public sphere. Again, now we don't have facts. Duterte is one of the leaders around the world who has created alternative realities. In my country, Rappler was born in 2012, and the whole mantra for Rappler is to build communities of action using technology and giving journalism as the food we feed our communities of action. Beginning in the end of 2015 to 2016 during the election campaign, we watched the transformation of the information ecosystem. And it wasn't until after President Duterte won, he was aided by social media to win the elections. But after he won, not coincidentally with the start of this brutal drug war that according to the UN has killed at least 27,000 people in 3 years, right? So in July of 2016, we saw the weaponization of social media, where it turned around disinformation networks, methodically spread lies, methodically pounded the fracture lines of society to divide society. And I watched the creation of the polarization of our society based on political half-truths. This is all new. And not only does it divide our society, not only do they pound the fracture lines of society, this is a new weapon of attack against individual journalists. Brand new, exponential attacks meant to pound us to silence. And women are targeted at least 10 times more than men. So you have, at best, sexist attacks, misogynistic at worst. Let me tell you the methodology.
You said we are the petri dish yesterday.
Yes. So this month, a few weeks ago, I saw Cambridge Analytica's whistleblower, Christopher Wiley, and I asked him what role the Philippines played in the disinformation ecosystem, right? And he said that, in his words, we're the petri dish, because 100 million people all adapting to social media. You have the, we spend the most time on social media globally 4 years running. And he said what they do is, so think about it like this, Facebook and the giants, Facebook, YouTube, Twitter come in, it's imported from outside. We adapt to it first because it is a way to connect. That's correct. The second generation of digital colonialization came from companies like Cambridge Analytica. And Christopher Wiley said that before he even joined Cambridge Analytica, its parent company, SEL, had been operating in the Philippines. And he said that they first tested tactics of manipulation in the Philippines and other countries in the global south, where essentially they could test with impunity, right? If it doesn't work, they pay no cost. But if it does work, what they do is, and this is his words, Christopher Wiley's words, he said they port it to the United States and other Western countries. So we're the testing ground. And this is extremely dangerous because if you think about it like this, the global south is where emerging democracies are coming from. Our institutions are weak to begin with. We don't understand this, and we've adapted social media. Many countries like the Philippines, zero rating for Facebook, like Myanmar. And in our countries, every day that Facebook doesn't act means people die. We pay the worst price for the experimentation of Silicon Valley and other tech companies. I'm angry at this.
Yes, and you have a lot of reasons to be angry.
Yeah, because I could go to jail because of what they've done, you know?
Brink. So, did the whistleblower give an example?
I've lived through the example.
What was your worst nightmare where you could tell truth is of no value?
This is, you know, for us, this is a battle we've been fighting for more than 3 years. In August of 2016, I gave data to Facebook to show them how it had been weaponized. And we looked at 26 fake accounts. We discovered 26 fake accounts and then manually counted how many other accounts on Facebook could these 26 fake accounts influence. When you manually count it, it takes a long time, but we found that it influences up to 3 million other accounts. 26 to 3 million, right? Using the same methodology, Facebook took down 30,000 fake accounts in the French elections. 30,000. So that gives you a scope of the disinformation that is possible. Facebook didn't give us data, didn't take action. So we decided to go ahead, and we've done several stories on the propaganda war. Essentially, the more I've learned over the years, the more I've realized this is essentially, these platforms are behavior modification systems. It's real, it's real time, and it impacts reality. When we published the very first three-part series in late September, early October 2016, it was the first around the world, right? I wrote two of the three-part series. As soon as we published it, I was bombarded. It got to a point at the beginning where I was responding to these attacks. Then I realized that they didn't want to listen to me. They were trying to pound me to silence. So I just started counting how many attacks per hour. And in that weekend, I was getting at least 90 hate messages per hour. This is psychological warfare. It is targeted to journalists to make us stop working. And we had no weapons against this. In the past, when I was with CNN, I could hide behind my organization. This is personal. It is visceral. It's unprecedented. So what did we do is we just kept doing the stories. And we told our public what was happening. Not that anyone cared at the beginning, right? And frankly, I talked to more than 50 officers, people I knew inside Facebook, and it wasn't until Mark Zuckerberg was in front of Congress in 2018 that this huge organization began to move.
You know, because of the Russian bullshit. Yeah.
Yes, but you know, even then American news groups got it wrong. It's not about winning an election. This is about weakening the fabric of society at a personal level. This micro-targeting of data is extremely dangerous and allows the manipulation at a mass scale of people who don't even understand they're being manipulated, right? So it circumvents all of the processes of democracy because it circumvents free will, and it is not for sale to us. It's our private personal experiences. It's for sale to companies, to governments, it's for sale to anyone with money and power. This is a new threat. It's almost like the atom bomb went off again, except this time, no one knew.
Any idea?
How we solve it?
No, not that big.
But I do.
Any idea? Yeah, that comes. Second next question. Any idea who was behind these 90 attacks per hour?
Yes, because we started collecting data in July and August of 2016. We now have a database we call the Shark Tank. It's more than a terabyte in size. It's kind of like having a terrorist network analysis, right? So we go inside. Essentially, I look at information cascades. How does one message spread to so many? I think where the tech platforms get it wrong is freedom of speech. Anyone can say what they want, what they think. When they say it to their neighbor, fine. But you do not allow mass scale distribution of hate, right? You do not allow mass scale attacks. And this is part of the problem globally. This is huge because governments like mine incite to hate against truth tellers, against journalists, against human rights activists. If you look at this, this atmosphere of violence is not just happening in the virtual world on the social media platforms, it's also happening in the real world because that is the foundation of the power of President Duterte. This brutal drug war, according to the United Nations and our own Human Rights Commission, has killed at least 27,000 people from July of 2016 to December of 2018. That is an unprecedented scale and number. And to allow this to continue with impunity, I'm shocked by this. This is why we continue working. And this is why Rappler comes under attack, because we have an impunity series that focuses on the drug war, proving that vigilantes were hired by the Philippine police and were paid to kill. Where is that okay?
They say about Trump that he doesn't really need or want to convince a majority. It's enough that a majority of people doesn't trust anything anymore.
That's the whole idea of disinformation. And it starts with Russian disinformation. So December of 2018, when the U.S. Senate Intelligence Committee released this data of the IRA, the Internet Research Agency, and Russian disinformation networks, we looked at that data, we connected it to our data, and found the links from the pro-Duterte bloggers and content creators directly to the IRA and how they feed back into the loop. The nervous system of the world right now is being ruled by disinformation networks where stories with half-truths are misleading the majority of our populations in these democracies, right?
So it's not the idiot in his pajama in his bedroom making up some bullshit stories, it's organized.
There's a backbone. This is the nervous system, I would say. And then what happens is that you then take a lot of white men in general, but you know, you take people who are unhappy with their lives, who spend a lot of time on online, and you further radicalize them to act. We know in the United States that inciting to hate leads to real world violence. Christchurch proved it is global. Why do we allow this? The biggest problem that I see is that we don't have facts. That is the weakening of the fabric of all of our democracies globally. And this is not just a Philippine problem. So let me do glasses half empty and half full, right? The glass is half full because for the first time, we live in a global landscape, right? And that is incredible. I've always wanted something like that. It's why I used to work for CNN. But at the same time, a lie told in Germany today will travel to the Philippines like that, and vice versa, right? So we need to protect this public sphere that is global in nature. And I think that we can do that.
Oh.
One of the things that we're working on. Well, this will be signed. We were just at the UN General Assembly. There are 20 countries that are signing statement of principles for the internet, right? So think about post-World War II, post-Holocaust, post-atom bomb. The world decided that they needed to come together because people need to be protected against the worst of human nature, right? So what did they do? They created Bretton Woods. They created NATO. They created the UN Declaration of Human Rights, right? This is how our world has been governed. Global powers have signed on to these. We need something like this for the internet, because the internet is extremely powerful, and we've left it in the hands of young men in Silicon Valley to determine a global landscape. They don't know how to protect the public sphere. So this has to be governments, needs to be, yes, even governments, like the UN Declaration of Human Rights, right? Needs to be, it needs to be news organizations, tech people, academe. This needs to pull the world together again. How do we prevent power from turning against people, right? How do we prevent the worst of human nature from unleashing this power against us? And then after that, we need something like a global Interpol to make sure that the people who carry out these information operations don't get away with impunity. It needs to stop. I think this is an existential moment for both journalists and democracies around the world. If we don't take significant action now, democracy as we know it is dead. We in the Philippines are the dystopian future of Western democracies because we had no defenses against this type of attacks and this virus that is killing our democracy.